Today's Issues continues on AFR.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ray Pritchard joining us from Kansas City. Steve Jordahl in studio. A lot of news going on today, so we'll jump right into this. AFR.net, by the way, is the website. You can listen live there and also catch past shows, Steve.
Boy, it has been a morning. I've decided, I downloaded the whole 400 and whatever pages of
448.
The report. It is on my desktop at my computer. I've only been able to read, Ray, about 350 pages of it in the last 5 minutes, so boy, I'm not going to be able to conclusively
you're gonna
tell
have to
you
catch
what it
up,
is.
Steve.
I know.
I mean, come on.
That's real speed reading.
Yeah, 150 pages a minute, that's kind of slow.
In my defense, a lot of it was redacted, so it's easy to get through that stuff. Now, I've been looking at what the reaction has been from some Democrats and from the media since this rollout of the report and the press conference this morning from Mr. Barr. And needless to say, they're not happy. You heard earlier in the show from Maxine Waters before this whole thing was rolled out, since she has said, this is her tweet, her Twitter feed, Barr said the words "no collusion, no collusion" straight out of the mouth of Trump. No attempt to hide his continuing defense of the president using the president's own words. How much more of a lackey can he be? Fake AG. And then she said, Barr auditioned for the job. He said he would protect Trump, and that's what he's done. So she's kind of the one-note Sally there. House Intelligence, this is from Adam Schiff. The House Intelligence Committee has formally invited Special Counsel Mueller to testify in the counterintelligence investigation. After a two-year investigation, the public deserves the facts, not Attorney General Barr's political spin. It goes on and on. I could read about a dozen of them. They're not happy, and they're not giving up. I don't know how long they can keep this up, but they are trying with their last breath.
Sure.
To continue the fact that there was a corrupt president here when facts don't seem to support that.
Yeah, and look, there's going to be, and I'm reading, I'm watching Fox now on the, in the studio, there's going to be things in this 450-page Mueller report that don't look good from a public relations standpoint for President Trump. I mean, I'm reading the headlines now are the scrolls about how Trump, you know, urged people in the White House not to talk to Mueller and things like this, which I don't even know if all the details are behind that. But I just want to make this point, and that is the whole idea that President Trump could obstruct justice is really not, in my opinion, and people will disagree with me on this, in my opinion, the president cannot, from a law standpoint, obstruct justice because he has the pardon power. He has the pardon power. He's the top law enforcement official in the country. Him asking questions, trying to find out information about an investigation, even though it includes him, to me, he cannot obstruct justice. The second thing is, according to Robert Mueller, his team said that they thought they could subpoena the president, but they chose not to because obviously the president talked or submitted written answers voluntarily. The thing on that is, in my opinion, and according to the DOJ, you cannot subpoena a sitting president.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that Donald Trump got the Hillary Clinton treatment?
No, he did not get the Hillary Clinton treatment because guess why? His written answers were under oath.
Oh, okay.
And hers weren't.
Yeah.
Okay. Her interview wasn't under oath, unfortunately. Right. So Trump had to actually, you know, hold his hand up and say, "I promise to tell the truth and nothing but the truth."
Hey, Steve.
Yes, sir.
I've got a question for you. Just you've had a chance to look, just at least thumb through it a little bit.
Yep.
How much of it appears to be redacted?
Not a lot. There's not entire pages. There's a paragraph here and there. It seems, and every time there is, that there's an explanation on that blackout in whatever color they have decided to do the different genres of redactions. Why they redacted it, but no, it is lightly redacted as was announced.
Ray, I just want to get your thoughts on one more thing, and that is, you know, there all this stuff, this information, and these reports surrounding how the investigation went, President Trump's reactions throughout the investigation, Maybe some things he probably would have been better off not saying or not doing during the investigation. This is really a side issue, because the whole issue at hand, the main thing, if you will, is whether he broke the law during the campaign in 2016.
Right. You know, you read the report, you're going to find any number of times when the president got angry. Newsflash, presidents get angry. You're going to find any number of times where he was upset and frustrated and felt like he was being hindered in his job as president. Newsflash, the president does have a temper, and sometimes he uses strong language. All of that is rather irrelevant, isn't it?
Right.
First of all, presidents get upset. Presidents are human beings, right? So they get upset when they feel like people are trying to investigate them unfairly. All of that, it seems to me, Walker, doesn't matter at all. It really goes to the question, did he do anything that rises to the level of obstruction of justice? And apparently, evidently, the answer seems to be clearly no. I'm sort of thinking about this. We haven't even talked about the collusion. I just think we're not going to hear about collusion anymore. I think whatever relevant argument there's going to be going forward is, did he commit any obstruction of justice?
Yeah.
But really, it sounds as if the answer to that is pretty definitely no.
Steve, I want to ask you this. You know, last week or 2 weeks ago, the Attorney General, I think he was testifying on the budget of the Department of Justice, and he basically said, yeah, there was spying or surveillance on the Trump campaign. Let me ask you this. I think in May, if I'm not mistaken, or sometime this summer, the Inspector General is supposed to release a report on how this investigation began and whether it was legal and ethical. Do you think William Barr do you think he has the backbone, I guess, if you will, to push forward with that?
I'm not sure if he can legally ignore an inspector general report.
Right.
If they find credible evidence of wrongdoing, mm-hmm. of illegality,
right.
I don't think that, I mean, I think he'll do the same thing that he's done with the Mueller report, which is systematically, non-emotionally,
yes.
just as a matter of course and as a matter of his job, start looking into what needs to be done with that. Jason Chaffetz was on, former Representative Jason Chaffetz was on Fox and Friends this morning. This is what he thought. He said this is the thing no one's talking about. Listen to this. Cut three.
Probably the most explosive and consequential thing that's going on right now won't be revealed today, and that is the report by the Inspector General Michael Horowitz. Mm-hmm. Horowitz, as the Inspector General, was appointed by Barack Obama. He was confirmed by the Senate unanimously, and for the last year he's been looking at what did this senior echelon at the FBI do when they have this highly documented bias and animus towards Donald Trump. Did they take inappropriate action to spy on the president and his campaign team? We already know the answer to that is yes. To what degree, and are there prosecutions that will come out in the next month or two?
So that's the inspector. That's Jason Chaffetz on the Inspector General report. And then the Senate committees are starting investigations into this whole thing as well. So there's a whole track now, you know, like there was a track with Mueller and
yep.
and the House investigating Trump. Now there's a whole thing with Mueller or Barr probably and or the Inspector General report and the Senate that are going to be looking into the possible wrongdoings leading up to or what caused this.
You know, Ray, I actually have a little bit of optimism here when it comes to whether if people, and I believe certain people did, break whether it be Department of Justice rules and procedures or sometime at some point maybe broke a law, initiating this investigation with the FISA warrant application and things like that, with Attorney General Barr going by the books and not being, I'm not saying he's a political hack there to execute revenge on behalf of President Trump, but simply applying the law as it's written, that gives me a little bit of optimism that maybe somebody might be held accountable.
You know, the president has said over and over again that no other president should ever have to go through this. Well, to get to that result, then what you just said has to happen. The investigators have to be investigated. And I can imagine, I think Attorney General Barr, he strikes me as a fairly even-handed sort of guy. Mm-hmm. I think I think he'll have to take that Inspector General's report, and he's going to have to do something about it. This is going to be, don't you think, Steve, this is going to be a major issue as we head into the 2020 presidential campaign?
I get a mixed sense on that, Ray. Part of me says, yeah, we're going to be hounding this whole story. Democrats aren't going to give up on the House, and now we've got the Inspector General report. On the other hand, I sense a little bit of a fatigue, and I sense some stuff petering out. And by this, I mean, I don't know how long the Democrats are going to be able to hold on to this rage
right.
when everything seems to be going against them. And that leaves them with a party that is furiously sprinting left into socialism and really no other message for the American people. They are in trouble, mm-hmm. I think, for the 2020 election.
Then, Steve, what we're saying is the Democrats are left with two arguments. One, we need socialism. And number two, President Trump is a crook. Mm-hmm. I don't think either one of those, or, you know, I'm saying that in some way. But if that's going to be their argument, I don't say either one of those is going to lead to victory up and down the ticket in 2020.
Well, you're seeing Beto and you're seeing Buttigieg now come out as, and policy-wise, these guys are as far left as anybody, but temperament-wise,
right.
they
right.
seem to want to be reasonable, have a discussion, yeah. they seem likable and nice, and I think those are the voices I think that the Democrats, frankly, if they're smart, and they're probably, hope they're not listening, not that they take my advice,
yeah.
but would put someone up like that because they don't have a whole lot of ideas right now, and the economy is going. They can't really run on hope for a better America.
Right.
They have to run on, even if he's not a crook or even if he's not connected to Russia, he's just not a nice guy.
You know, I think, and I'm no Democrat, I'm no Joe Biden fan, the former vice president, but here's the thing. I don't think America is ready for full-out socialism. And I don't think it's a good move, period, whether America's ready for it or not. But as far as the public sentiment for full-out Medicare for all, you know, let's do this Green New Deal and just keep printing money, which we already got a problem with, you know, I don't think America's ready for that. Maybe at some point, unfortunately, our country might shift that far. But that being said, I don't know, Ray, that the Democrat leaders can sit and reason and say maybe we need like a Biden who has, yes, some left-wing ideas and he sympathizes with the Bernie Sanders types, but he kind of holds a centrist view on some issues. I don't think the Democrats can reason like that. Instead, it seems like they're letting the left-wing part of their party push them farther and farther.
It's a strange day when we're talking about Joe Biden as a centrist, moderate Democrat.
Yeah.
But I guess compared to Bernie and AOC and some of the others, maybe he is. Boy, this is a strange world. I mean, who is left today? Who remains today? It's a better way to put it. Who
yeah.
remains today who could even be called a moderate Democrat outside of maybe Joe Manchin of West
right.
Virginia?
Well, they're all left.
yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to consider how the president might be running against this, what his message going forth is now as well.
Yeah. And to your point, Ray, I think we need to be careful, those of us who lean conservative when it comes to social issues, physical issues, I think we got to be careful, and I'm speaking to myself here, that we don't allow that shift you're talking about to the left, more liberal, more honestly, it ends up being unbiblical, many of the issues that they're running on. We shouldn't let that pull our worldview to the middle to where we're starting to warm up to socialism and things like that. You know, we got to be careful that we hold a biblical view on the issues and not allow them to sway us.
Is it gentleman
all I can say is that I think that's already happening. And especially inside, if you just look at the evangelical Christian side of things, the slippage is already there.
Yeah.
We're going to, those of us who are conservatives and conservative Christians, we're going to have to dig our feet in at some point to resist being pulled into the middle and ultimately over to the left side of the left side of the spectrum. It's going to get tougher, I think, in the days to come for Christians to hold to the full authority of the Bible and what it really says. We're going to have to We're going to have to be more determined in the future than we've been in the past if we want to continue to speak out on these issues. Mm-hmm. I hope we can stay the course. It's going to be a challenge.
There's a good column up at onenewsnow.com we put it up yesterday. I think you could probably still find it, by a guy named Peter Heck. And he is saying, the title of his column is, "Don't be surprised if when Christianity is made illegal, it's, in quotes, Christians who lead the charge." Hmm. And I'm concerned, Ray, what I'm seeing at Christian colleges with the acceptance of the LGBT message. You just saw the Indiana college, Taylor University, going freaking out because they asked Vice President Pence, a native son and the Vice President of the United States, and an outspoken evangelical, being invited to this evangelical college to give a commencement speech. We are seeing this slippage, this drifting away from, and I know Fred mentioned at the end of the last hour about people not attending churches anymore.
Well, that day is upon us, and we've talked before on the program how the Democratic Party, as it's moved left, it's pulled part of the Republican Party with it, right?
Yeah.
So this is a dangerous situation we're in, and we as evangelical Christians have got to be, we got to be strong because, well, what that fella said in the article, I'm afraid he's a prophet. I wish I could say I think he's wrong, but I think he's probably more right than wrong, that when that day comes, it'll be Christians who are leading the charge.
Let me ask you a question, Ray. Now the president is not under any of this fog of conspiracy and collusion, and we're getting, I believe, to the end of even, no matter how long and hard they yell, we're getting to the end of the obstruction charges. This is a president that is coming out of a storm and into fairly clear waters with a good economy. Do you think we're going to see a new version of President Trump who doesn't have enemies in the press he's going to be railing at anymore because they're being shut down, who doesn't have are we going to see, if we do see a calmer, gentler, less tweetable president, do you think that some Republicans may circle around back and come back to a very successful Republican Party?
You know, my first thought, Steve, is I completely doubt the premise of that question, only because I think Donald Trump is Donald Trump, right?
Yep.
He's going to be who he is, and he's already in full campaign mode. Do I expect a kinder, gentler President Trump? Actually, no. I expect that what we have seen, he is what he is, right? He is what he is. I was listening in that last segment. We had David Jeremiah talking about his book, but he mentioned President Trump a couple times and his Christianity, and Dr. Jeremiah was guarded in his comments, I thought, which is sort of the way everybody is, because you never know when Mr. Trump sits down what he's going to tweet out or what he's going to say. That's part of his appeal to a broad swath of the American population. So first of all, okay, let me say this. To answer your literal question, Steve, then I'll stop. I don't think the Democrats are going to let him off the hook, and I think they're going to continue to attack, and he is going to attack back. So I think we've got business as usual for the future. How's that for an answer?
That's an answer.
You know, and to further this discussion, I don't think, you know, Karl Rove, a longtime GOP strategist, chief of staff to George W. Bush, wrote a piece a couple weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal about how President Trump needs to let this whole Russia investigation go. He just needs to move on. And I don't really agree with that. I mean, I wouldn't make this failed Russia investigation your number one talking point during the 2020 campaign, but because President Trump needs to focus on actual issues that voters care about. But on down the list, President Trump, I'm not going to blame him, Ray, if he touts this ever so often about how the Democrats went after him and it didn't work.
Don't you think we're going to have these big rallies? I can see this. I can hear it. No collusion, no obstruction, no collusion, no obstruction. And the crowd shouting it back to him, driving the media nuts. At least in the next few months, I think that's what we're going to hear. I wouldn't be surprised if even in the fall of 2020, we were hearing those four words, no collusion, no obstruction. Again, not as the centerpiece, But I don't think Mr. Trump is going to let it go because this is a big victory, I think, for him.
I agree. Yeah.
Steve? Hey, I wanted to get to a couple other world events that are worth mentioning that I think we should just keep an eye on. North Korea is getting a little squirrely right now. They in the last couple of days, launched another missile with intercontinental capabilities, a new tactical guided missile. And they have indicated, they have said that they are looking to get Mike Pompeo out of the discussions. They don't want to hear from him anymore. They're starting to dictate to the United States who the United States can bring over as a part of the negotiating team. That bears watching. The North Koreans are meeting with the Russians as we speak. There's some bad things happening on
do,
that.
Do peninsula. You think the president will go along with that, Steve?
No,
Pompeo?
I don't think he will. I think he is very much a Pompeo fan from everything I can tell. Mm-hmm. And Mike Pompeo is a very good and credible negotiator, good Secretary of State. I think you can look for some more sanctions coming on North Korea. I mean, it's the carrot and stick, and the carrot was all the talks and we're going to make you part of the family of nations. The stick now is we're going to put some more stuff, some more sanctions down on you. I also wanted to update everybody. I don't know if you all or how much we talked about this young lady, Saul Paris, Pace from Florida, who went out to Denver to threaten the schools there. Did we talk about that much, Ray? You remember?
No.
Let me wrap this up. There was a young lady from Florida. She was 18 years old. She was very obsessed with Columbine. This is the 20th anniversary of the Columbine Massacre this week. She flew out from Florida to Denver and bought a shotgun and some ammunition. As soon as she got there, she was known to authorities, have posted sympathetic posts to the Columbine Massacre. They shut all the schools down yesterday in Denver. They just weren't going to take a chance, and they looked and looked. They finally found this young woman. She'd wandered up into the mountains, and she had killed herself. It's a sad story, but it was one that the country had been following, and I just wanted to kind of bring an update to that, if that's something that you guys have been wondering about.
So they closed down the schools yesterday.
Mm-hmm. They did. Was it yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, yesterday. Actually, the last 2 days.
Yeah.
Throughout Colorado, right?
Yeah.
And then she went and took the shotgun and killed herself.
That's right. It's you know, 18 years old. Such a tortured 18. Soul.
You know, Ray, I have an article coming out in our local newspaper this weekend, and this isn't the case here because she actually has a father because he was interviewed by some news outlets. But in other cases of teen suicide or teenagers being emotionally and spiritually disturbed, Ray, it often turns out, and the percentages show, that a lot of these teenagers come from broken homes.
Well, it's true, isn't it, that where you have a mother and a father, and you have a good family relationship, and you have good example there, that doesn't guarantee your kids are going to turn out okay, but it's the best way, right?
Right.
It's the best way to sort of lean the scales in the right direction.
Yeah. And I bring that up not to take a jab at single parents, but to say to all parents that it's important that not both biblically and from statistically wise, that both mother and father, biological parents, remain faithful to each other and raise the kids together. Yeah. Thank you, Ray, for joining the show today.
My pleasure.
All right, Steve, appreciate it.
My pleasure, too.
AFR.net is the website. You can stay tuned to American Family Radio the rest of the day. We'll have some special programming tomorrow. No Trivia Friday, but stay tuned to AFR throughout Easter weekend. God bless.